We are continuing our series through the Old Testament figures, and today we are going to look at Moses, one of the towering figures of the Bible. He wrote about one-sixth of the Bible for us. He wrote about a fifth of the Old Testament. He is the number one major figure in Judaism and one of the two or three biggest figures in the Bible, obviously. And as we're gonna read, and we're gonna cover all that in 25 minutes. So, you could say that we're covering a fifth of the Bible in 25 minutes here, and that's good. That should make you feel good about coming to church. But I'm excited about sharing this with you. And before we get into it, let's just remind you a little bit of what's going on in the story. The first story we're gonna read is the story of his birth. Now, Moses was born at a time when the Israelites were within Egypt. They had moved into Egypt to escape famine. And Joseph had told his brothers to come live here, and he would provide for them. And they have been multiplying. And they've gotten so big that the Pharaoh, the leader of Egypt, is scared of them, scared that they could overthrow the government. And so he has enslaved them. And he's trying to stop them from multiplying. It's an interesting story when you think of it. Think of Moses sitting around a campfire at the foot of Mount Sinai telling the Israelites these stories. And this is really the first couple of chapters of Exodus is kind of a rallying story. And he's talking to Pharaoh about how he tried to stop their reproduction, you know. And he says, first Pharaoh tried to stop us by making the men work too hard, but he couldn't wear us out. And the men are all kind of nudging each other, couldn't wear us out. And so then he's like, the second plan to stop the multiplication was for the midwives to kill the babies. And the midwives went back to Pharaoh and said, man, these Israelite women, they're not like Egyptian women. They have the babies before we even get there. And the women are nudging each other going, yeah, we're not weak like those Egyptian women. And then we get to this story where Moses, his own parents, were supposed to cast him into the Nile. And instead they put him in a basket, and Pharaoh's own daughter finds him. But Moses, you know, keeps her identity secret to the end, and it's this great overthrow, because at this time when he's telling the story, they know, all the Israelites know, Moses is going to be the leader who's going to overthrow the Egyptians, and Pharaoh's own daughter saved him. This is ultimate kind of slap in the face to Pharaoh's plans. And so Moses is born and raised in Pharaoh's own household. And then he begins to kind of want to take power. He realizes that he's special, right? And so he's going to deliver the Israelites. And he sees an Egyptian man being harsh with an Israelite and beating him. And so he goes and he kills that Egyptian and buries him. And the next day, he goes out and he sees two Israelites fighting. And he says, why are y'all fighting? And one of the Israelites looks at him and says, what are you going to do? You going to kill us the way you did that Egyptian? Who made you our ruler? And Moses gets terrified. And he runs off into Midian. And he lives there for several decades. He marries. And he's humiliated. And he hides in exile. Until, of course, the famous story where God comes and finds him by talking to him through a burning bush. A bush that is on fire but it's not consumed. And God sends him back, and he goes back to Pharaoh, and he says, let my people go. And Pharaoh refuses, and he continues to warn Pharaoh about the plagues that are coming, and Pharaoh refuses to soften his heart. And ultimately, Egypt is completely destroyed, and Moses leads the Israelites out of Egypt. And he leads them to the Red Sea, and Pharaoh sends his army after them, and Moses is there, and he has his rod, his staff, and he strikes the sea, and the sea splits, and they go through the sea. And you know the story, of course. The Egyptians follow them into the sea, and God releases the waters and ultimately just destroys Pharaoh's army and desolates Egypt as he brings Israel out of Egypt. And then Moses leads the Israelites through the wilderness, They have no food, and he provides for them manna from heaven. They have no water, and he strikes the stone, and water comes out and gives them plenty of water to drink. And he leads them to Mount Sinai, where he gives them the Ten Commandments and prays for the Israelites, and ultimately leads them to the brink of the Promised Land, where he is taken up onto the mountain of Pisgah. And he can see all of the Promised Land before him, but God won't let Moses go into the Promised Land. And Moses dies there, and God himself buried him. And that's the story of Moses, the greatest leader in the Old Testament. He and David are the two towering figures. And there's a few things that I want us to learn from Moses' life that I want to really share with you today. But before we get into those, let's just read the story, these specific passages. Please stand as we read from God's Word, from Exodus chapters 2, 4, and Numbers 12. Now a man from the house of Levi went and took his wife, a Levite woman. And the woman conceived and bore a son. And when she saw that he was a fine child, she hid him for 3 months. But when she could hide him no longer, she took for him a basket made of bulrushes by the riverbank. And his sister stood at a distance to know what would be done to him. Now the daughter of Pharaoh came down to bathe at the river, and while her young women walked beside the river, she saw the basket among the reeds and sent her servant woman, and she took it. When she opened it, she saw the child, and behold, the baby was crying. And she took pity on him and said, "This is one of the Hebrews' children." Then his sister said to Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and call you a nurse from the Hebrew women to nurse the child for you?" And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Go." So the girl went and called the child's mother. And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Take this child away and nurse him for me, and I will give you your wages." So the woman took the child and nursed him. And when the child grew older, she brought him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. And she named him Moses because she said, "I drew him out of the water." One day when Moses had grown up, he went out to his own people and he looked on their burdens and he saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his people. And he looked this way and that and seeing no one, he struck down the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. When he went out the next day, behold, two Hebrews were struggling together. And he said to the man in the wrong, "Why do you strike your companion?" But the man answered, "Who made you to be a prince and a judge over us? Do you mean to kill me as you killed the Egyptian?" Then Moses was afraid and thought, "Surely this thing is known." And when Pharaoh heard of it, he sought to kill Moses. But Moses fled from Pharaoh and stayed in the land of Midian and sat down by a well. Now this is two chapters later. After God has spoken to Moses, Moses says to the Lord, "Oh my Lord, I'm not eloquent, either in the past or since you have spoken to your servant. But I'm slow of speech and of tongue." Then the Lord said to him, "Who's made man's mouth? Who makes him mute or deaf or seeing or blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Now therefore go, and I will be with your mouth, and I will teach you what you shall speak." But Moses said, "Oh, my Lord, please send someone else." And then this is the final story. This is after he's led the Israelites out of Egypt. Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses because of a Cushite woman whom he had married, for he had married a Cushite woman. And they said, "Has the Lord indeed spoken only through Moses? Has he not spoken through us also?" And the Lord heard it. Now the man Moses was very meek, more than all the people who were on the face of the earth. And suddenly the Lord said to Moses and to Aaron and to Miriam, "Come out, you three, to the tent of meeting." And the three of them came out. And the Lord came down in a pillar of cloud and stood at the entrance of the tent and called Aaron and Miriam. And they both came forward and he said to them, "Hear my words. If there is a prophet among you, I, the Lord, make myself known to him in a vision, or I speak with him in a dream. But not so with my servant Moses. He is faithful in all my house. With him I speak mouth to mouth, clearly and not in riddles. And he beholds the form of the Lord. Why then were you not afraid to speak against my servant Moses?" Thus far, the reading of God's word. Please be seated. I We could easily spend the entire summer on Moses, and we very probably will do that in the coming years. But what I want you to see for today is simply this. God makes his servants into exactly what he needs them to be to serve his church. God forms us to be exactly what the church needs us to be. God was involved with Moses' life from before he was born to prepare him to be precisely the leader that his people needed to bring him out, to bring them out from under oppression. The first thing I want you to see is that God prepared Moses to be what Israel needed him to be. You know the story, it's a famous story, right? Pharaoh's own daughter saves him from the river and raises Moses in her own household as her own son. Now, why is that important? What is it about growing up in Pharaoh's own household that prepared Moses, that made him so ready to be the leader of Israel? Well, there's a few things that are pretty obvious. First of all, Moses was educated. He was extremely well prepared. He had the best libraries in the world available to him. He would have been among the most educated people in the world in his day. He had at his beck and call all the resources he needed to write the Bible. An illiterate slave could not have written the first five books of the Bible. God was preparing him, even though Moses had no idea what he was preparing him for. But there's much more to it than that, right? God was going to call Moses to go into the palace and to confront Pharaoh face to face. Now, for a normal person, for a slave especially, to go into that kind of pomp and wealth and royalty would have been overwhelming. There's a great movie. Well, that's not a great movie. There's a cute little love story movie called American President that came out a few years ago. And it's about kind of the president being a widower, and he's trying to date, and just kind of all the cute things that happens as a result of that. But he ends up dating this reporter, this lobbyist, who's politically very divided against him, and she kind of hates him at first. And she tries to stand up to him, but he brings her into the Oval Office. And she's just overwhelmed by the place and the person. And he says to her, "You know why this room is round?" And she said, "No." And he said, "Because it throws you off. This room is designed to be the greatest home court advantage the world has ever known." And she tries to stand up to him, and she says, "And I'm going to walk out of this office right now." And he says, "Well, if you walk out that door, you're going to jail. Because that's the door to my private residence, and the Secret Service will throw you in jail in 1 second if you walk out that door." And, you know, it's just that overwhelming sense of, I don't belong here. Anybody would have had that sense going into Pharaoh's palace, but not Moses. He grew up there. It was nothing to him. He had been there before. He wasn't impressed. He could keep his wits about him. God was preparing him for something he had no idea was preparing him for. And he was preparing him to lead. Moses would lead 600,000 Israelites out of Egypt. That is an overwhelming task, to have that many people looking to you as their leader. The natural gifts that must have been obvious to him, must have been in him, had to be overwhelming that 600,000 people would follow. Can you imagine looking at someone going, "Oh, he just said both of this sea, so I guess we're going to do that." He was designed to be this person. He was trained to be a leader, to be a king from his very childhood. He was never trained to be a slave. He was never trained to be a servant. He was prepared. Now, why do I labor that point? Why do I spend 5 minutes on that? None of you are going to lead Israelites out of bondage. But I do want you to know this. God prepares his people to do what he calls them to do. You are prepared to do what God has called you to do. And whatever station of life you're in, It's not like God is looking at you going, oh no. God didn't look down at his Israelites and say, man, I got to get them out of slavery. I wish I had somebody. You know, I guess I'm just going to take one of these illiterate slaves and make them into a leader. Boy, I hope he can handle it. He had been preparing someone for decades to do it. And God has been preparing you since before birth to be what he has called you to be. And sometimes that's overwhelming. It's scary because life just throws things at you. And you don't know if you're ready to do them. I remember so well when we had our second baby and coming home at night and this feeling that someone was going to pull back the curtain and reveal that I was just a joke. You know, just kind of come in and point their finger at me and go, who are you to think you're an adult? You're not a daddy. You're a kid. You have no idea what you're doing. And just kind of looking at myself going, well, I'm doing all the daddy things. You know, I'm making a living and I'm supporting my family and I'm coming home and I'm doing the discipline. I'm reading the stories and I'm giving them I guess I am a daddy. I guess I was ready for this. Where you are, and that feeling never changes. You keep kind of looking down throughout life going, am I really ready to do this? I guess so, because I'm doing it. And I want you to know that God has prepared you to do. Some of you are going through very difficult things. Some of you are going through things you never thought, ever thought you were going to be called to do. Some of you are going through single parenthood and you never imagined that in a million years. And I want you to know God has prepared you to do that. You are the person that God wants to father these children, to mother these children, to do this job. You're prepared. God is at work. Sometimes he's at work doing things in things that we never would have imagined. He uses things that are not what we wanted him to use. I was, actually, you asked permission. I don't usually ask permission for illustrations, but I did this one. You know, we have a guy in our church, Glenn Hall Jr., who's been fired 5 times, been fired, like called into the office and fired 5 times in his life. And you know what he does now? He's a recruiter because he learned how to get jobs. He knows how to get jobs better than anybody I've ever known. All 5 times he got a raise. He always went to a job that paid him more. And so now he knows how to negotiate and how to get jobs. And he teaches people how to get jobs and he gets jobs for people. And he runs a ministry for our church, Overcoming Job Transition, where he teaches people how to get jobs. That was the Lord using. Glenn didn't sign up for that. Like when he graduated college, he didn't think to himself, I hope I get fired a lot. Like, that's what I really want. But what was happening? The Lord was preparing him. The Lord was preparing him to be what he was calling him to be. And that's true for you too. The Lord prepares us to be what he calls us to be. But he does more than prepare us with our gifts and our experiences. He has to prepare our hearts. Moses could have been just intolerable, couldn't he? I mean, honestly, when you hear the story of him kind of being the favorite son, raised from birth to be a king, don't you kind of go, ugh, we kind of hate people like that. He could have gone through his life thinking he was special, thinking he deserved something, that he had kind of this entitlement. And the Lord had to prepare him in that way too. God not only prepared Moses, but he humbled Moses. He absolutely humbled Moses. He was not going to lead like a favorite son. He had to be humbled so that he could be the leader that Israel needed. When I lived in Starkville, Bianca was pregnant with our fourth child, what she always craved when she was pregnant was Taco Bell. I don't know why, but the only time I've ever gone through a Taco Bell drive-thru was when she was pregnant. And one day I was going out to Taco Bell for her, and the sign said, which I was actually thankful to see, it said closed for renovation. I thought, yes, no more Taco Bell. And but then I looked over and I saw a slab. Taco Bell had been, you know, when you think closed for renovation, you think like new carpet, new tables. But someone had come in with a bulldozer and taken the building down to its slab. Now that's a renovation. And that's kind of what God does to Moses here. He doesn't just prepare him physically and intellectually to be a leader, but he takes him down to the foundation. Moses assumes this position of leadership. Surely I'm the one. And he goes out and he kills this Egyptian. And then the next day he goes out and he tries to settle an argument between two Hebrews. And one of the Hebrews looks at him and says, "Who's made you our ruler?" And the answer was nobody. And Moses was terrified. And he went out and he lived for decades in the wilderness in Midian. And he became a shepherd. Now that doesn't strike you. We kind of have this picture of, you know, Jesus the good shepherd. And so we're like, yeah, shepherds. But three different times we're told in the Bible, Egyptians hated shepherds. They despised shepherds. And Moses was raised as an Egyptian. He took the lowest form of job. He was dirty. He was humiliated. And when God calls out to him three times God tells him, "I want you to lead my people." And Moses says, "No, please not me." First he says, "Well, if I go and I try to tell the Israelites to follow me, they're going to say, 'Who are you? Who sent you?'" And God says, "Well, you tell them that I am sent you." We'll talk about that next week. And then Moses says, "But I'm not eloquent. I'm not a good speaker." And God says, "Look, I made the tongue. I think I can overcome that one." And then Moses just looks in this pathetic sentence. He says, "Please send someone else. Just anyone else. Please send someone else." This person who was so ready, right? He just took it on himself to be the leader of Israel, is now at this point of going, "Please send somebody else. Not me." He was utterly and completely humbled. Moses experienced that feeling that says, "I can't do this," and he truly believed it. He truly believed he could not lead Israel, and that's what made him safe to handle the power of being that kind of leader. And I think that's almost a universal feeling among Christians. As God prepares us, as God calls us to himself, and he brings us to a position of responsibility, there's always that sense of, "I can't do this. It's just too big for me." You see, Christians are different. People who've actually been with Christ, we don't boast in our strength. We don't boast in our wealth. We don't boast in our abilities. We don't boast in our victories. As the Apostle Paul said, if we're going to boast, we boast only in our weakness and in the great love that God has shown us when he blessed weak failures like us. That's what it means to be truly Christian, is that you are overwhelmed by how gracious God would be to an epic failure like you. And that is a necessary and painful step. And the danger about talking about a step like this in a little 7-minute sermon blurb is this: you almost make it sound quaint. It stinks. It is awful. I've told y'all some of the stories in the past, but I don't think I've ever just come right out and said it. In September of 2000, I was fired from RUF. I was a campus minister. My boss came into my office, I remember very clearly, and he said, "This is your last year." He didn't use the words fired. He was very nice about it. "This is your last year here." I was at Delta State. He said, "You're bored. Everybody who looks at you can tell that you're bored. It's time for you to move on. This is your last year, so get a job." And I'd already been looking for a job for 9 months, and I really kicked it in the gear. And the fact of the matter was, nobody wanted me. I was in that situation like Groucho Marx used to say, I would never join a club that would have somebody like me for a member. I just was not interested in any church that was looking for somebody like me as a pastor. And I was stuck, and I ended up accepting a job to plant a church in a small town. And everybody knew this was a disaster. I knew it wasn't going to work. Bianca knew it wasn't going to work. But it was our only option. So we're just like, well, okay. And I went to my last RUF staff training. It was in Atlanta in December. And as I walked out to the car, I got in the car to leave, and I just started crying uncontrollably. Nobody wanted me. And the job I'd always wanted, to be a campus minister at a big campus, I was never going to get it, and it was my own fault. And I just wept and wept. It is not fun to be at that place, but it is necessary to be at that place. Because that is the place when you have nothing, that overwhelming sense, I can't do this, and it's my fault. That is the place where you're ready to receive grace. That is the place when there is nothing about you that says, yeah, I can do this. Yeah, I did this on my own. There's no writing song, you know, Philippians 4:13 on your face and going and doing something great for the Lord at that point. It is just purely, I'm an empty vessel. I'm broken and cracked, and I'll go wherever you call me. And that is the thing about Moses. He was broken, and he was at that place. And some of you are at that place right now, and I want to encourage you. Here is a place where you're going to find grace. God did not call out to Moses in the royal halls of Pharaoh's palace. He did not call Moses in the classrooms or in the libraries of Pharaoh's books. He called Moses when Moses was out in the wilderness looking after somebody else's sheep, helpless and low. And that brings us to the greatest thing that was ever said about Moses. And he didn't say it, but God said it of him. Moses was the friend of God. He was the friend of God. This is a beautiful story. It's in Numbers chapter 12. And I think it's beautiful for a lot of reasons. One is because it's just funny. Moses married an Ethiopian woman, a Cushite. She was black, right? So if you ever wonder what the Bible says about interracial marriage, if you're still worried about that, then this should settle it. Because it really bothered Aaron and Miriam. This is what's so funny about it, okay? I'm just going to take a little second here. It really bothered Aaron and Miriam that Moses had a black wife. And so God came down, and Aaron and Miriam, they're Moses' sister and brother, and they're mad at him, and they're complaining about him having a black wife. And so basically God comes down and says, you think women should be white, huh? All right, I'll make you white. And he gives Miriam leprosy. Isn't that hilarious? That's what happens. He was like, all right, I'll make it real white. And then Moses intercedes for her. He never says a single word to defend himself. He intercedes for her. He begs God, no, this is too harsh, don't do this. And he's left there arguing with God. God says, but Moses, they insulted you. And Moses says, but please be merciful. Please have mercy. And that kind of shows the other irony of this text, because the text says Moses was the most humble man on the earth. What's ironic about that? Moses wrote it. It's kind of funny. You know, we think, well, you're not too humble. But actually, the text makes clear that he was. He says not a single word to defend himself. There's no anger there. There's no justification there. The only thing he does is he begs the Lord. He pleads for grace for those who have insulted him. And we see that Moses has truly been humbled because he's met God. Because he knows him. And the thing that God says to defend Moses is this. He says, why are you talking about Moses? And I love the way some of the older translations and paraphrases put it. They say, God says, if I want to talk to somebody, if I'm here to reveal my will, I'll talk to somebody through visions or through dreams, but not Moses. I talk to him face to face the way you talk to a friend. And that's just a precious statement. He's my friend. And the beautiful thing about that statement is this. What was true of only Moses in the Old Testament is true for everyone who has beheld Jesus. Because Jesus, we're told of Jesus in John chapter 1, no one has ever seen the glory of God, but Jesus has beheld it. And he's made it clear to all of us. And when Moses asked his friend, when he asked God, let me see your face, God said, you can't see my face. You're not strong enough. It'll overwhelm you. It'll kill you. But what I'll do is I'll put you in a cleft in the rocks, and I will call my name out, and I'll make all my goodness pass before you, and I'll cover you with my hand. And then as I walk by, I will take my hand away from you, and you may see my hind parts, and we don't know what that means. But and just that vision made Moses radiant, literally made him radiant. But for us in the New Testament, Jesus is that covering. God has brought forth his glory in front of us, and he has revealed it to us, and he has covered us with Jesus, and all of the sin has been punished in him, so that we can behold Jesus' glory. We can behold God's glory, so that we are his friends. And that's why Jesus says in John 13, you're not my servants. I don't call you my servants. You are my friends. You are my friends. That's what I want for you. I feel like what the temptation for second and third generation Christians has always been throughout history to stop believing that you're God's friend. You go back into this slave mentality that you're God's servants, that everything depends upon your obedience, that the only thing God really wants from you is obedience and duty. And he treats you well when you obey well. And the beautiful message, the truth of the New Testament, the truth of the gospel, is that we are his friends. Do you feel that way? Do you feel like Jesus is on your side? He's on your side. He is the one defending you. He is the one protecting you. He is the one walking with you when you're being unjustly accused or when you're being thrown into situations that you had never imagined. He's with you. And that opportunity, that offer for friendship is always open. Even when God is humbling us, he's doing it because he loves us. Because he knows the danger, how terrible it is to walk in your own pride and to fall. Will you trust God as your friend? Please pray with me.